Tashi Delek, for today's episode of In Conversation with Tibet TV, we have a special guest from the U.S. He is currently professor of religion at the Williams College, Massachusetts, United States. His reputation follows as the first Westerner to receive Geshe Larenpa degree in the year 1985. And today he is here in Dharamshala, and we are taking this opportunity to talk to him about his work and Buddhist philosophy in general. He is Professor Josh Dreyfus, also known as Geshe Sangye Samdup. Welcome to our program, Geshe-la.
Thank you.
So to start with, Geshe-la, could you share with us your initial spark that ignited your interest in Buddhism, and also what motivated you, your decision to embark in the study of Buddhist philosophy?
Thank you for having me. My coming here was something of an accident. I think what I wanted to find, I was 20 years old, and what I wanted to find is a meaningful approach to life. And I decided, for some reason which I don't quite understand, that India was a country I had to go to. And when I came to India, I was kind of really pretty disappointed. I didn't like what I saw. And so I was wondering what to do when I met some Buddhist monk who told me, go to Dharamsala, it's cool, it's nice, it's not like it is today, it's very quiet, and you can have a nice time and you can even study Buddhism. And so I came to Dharamsala in October of 1970, and then I met some people who took me to see a Geshe Rabten, who then gave the basic Buddhist teaching about the Four Noble Truths. And that's what made me decide that this is a tradition I want to learn more about, and I want to do it well, and I want to do it thoroughly. So I decided I would learn Tibetan language and then do more study. For 2 years, we were staying as guests at Namgyel Monastery, me and a French friend, and we were studying Lamrim teachings with Geshe Lati Rinpoche. And so after 2 years of teaching, we went to see His Holiness. In those days, His Holiness was not yet a big world star as he is now. So you could see him. It was difficult, but you could see him, and he was like my academic advisor. And so we went to see him, and he told us, yes, there are two paths. You can be a meditator, or you can be a scholar. And if you're a scholar, you're going to study for many years, and you will have white hair when you finish, but it's worthwhile. And he told me, this is what I should do. And so this is what I did.
And it's a rigorous study, right? 15 years, or it takes more than that?
It's about 12 to 15 years. And I was, I did a kind of slightly shortened version, because usually it's more than 15 years. So I followed the complete curriculum of Gelug Tibetan monks, as it's taught at the Buddhist school of the Institute of Buddhist Dialectic and in the monasteries in the south. And I studied for something like 12 years, and then I passed my Geshe exam.
As a Western scholar on the path of Buddhism, could you describe your personal transformation or changes your journey has brought into your life?
Well, I am an intellectual, I am a philosopher. And so what I wanted to do is to find a philosophy that answered the big question of life, which is, why was I born and what's going to happen to me? And so this is, I guess, what I came to find here. And I guess I found something of an answer here. And so this is what I came here for, and this is what I got. Now, obviously, I changed during the years, but it's not... the transformation is gradual. As you study, you slowly kind of model yourself about after what you study. And so that's certainly the case. But the main thing for me is an answer about the meaning of life. And this is what I came here for, and this is what I got. And so what I wanted to do here, after I got that answer, is study that answer in depth and detail. And so I learned the language, and then I did this thorough studies that took me quite a few years.
And what are your core interests in the whole of study in Buddhist philosophy?
Well, my main interest is the meaning of life. And then I have other interests as well. One is to understand consciousness and the mind. And I think I learned a lot about that in the course of my studies, and I continue to learn about that. And another area is Madhyamika philosophy, which is a very unique philosophy which has not been preserved as a live tradition outside of Tibet. And so Tibetan Buddhism is a unique resource for people who want to learn that philosophical tradition, which is it's a form of skepticism. And this is, so these are my two interests. One is consciousness, the mind, and the other is Madhyamika philosophy.
And Geshe-la, you're also part of the Mind and Life Institute for many years, and you have with a blend of Western science background and also Buddhist philosophy studies through your rigorous studies that you have done here. So what's your take on that, the whole idea of this congregation, of this discussion or dialogue on the...
Yeah, I think it's a very useful dialogue. I mean, it's I participated. I don't have... I mean, I have a background in science, but relatively elementary and rudimentary. but the Mind and Life dialogue, I think, is valuable, at least was valuable for me, because I learned a great deal. My interest in mind and consciousness was really developed by my participating in this dialogue, because, as you probably know, consciousness is a big mystery. Nobody knows. Many people pretend that they know, but really nobody knows. And so I think the project of Mind and Life is something like, well, we don't know, so we might as well have a meeting of people who have different perspectives and trying to understand what we mean by this term of mind and consciousness. And I think Tibetan Buddhism has some, does not necessarily have the ultimate answer, but it has some very important insight into the nature of consciousness, because too often we think about consciousness as something relatively superficial, like I see the table or I think about my teacup or something like this. And that's part of our consciousness, but that's a relatively surface level phenomenon. And it's interesting to understand that consciousness has many levels of subtlety. And so Tibetan Buddhism is not unique, but it's kind of it has a very rich presentation of the different level of consciousness. For example, awake consciousness, when there is dream consciousness, and then there is full sleep consciousness, and then there is even deeper level of consciousness. And that way to understanding consciousness is very important, because if we understand consciousness, we will understand it at something which is multi-level, and not something which is just an info processing device. You know, nowadays people are very big on AI and on ChatGPT and this kind of stuff, and I teach about that. I'm very interested in that. But the reality is that consciousness is not just an information processing device. It's what makes us alive, an alive person. And so there is this level of information processing, but below that there is a deeper level of consciousness. And that's, I think, important to explore. And Tibetan Buddhism has some interesting idea and also some interesting meditative practice that relate to this kind of more subtle level of consciousness.
So you have out of many publications that you have, one of it's about emotional pathologies and their remedies.
Regulation,
right.
Yeah.
So an Abhidharmic view at MIT in 2007. So can you tell us a little bit more on that and how does it work?
Yeah, I think, okay, there is this deep stuff that we just talked about and it's kind of esoteric, right? And so it concerns people who do study of consciousness and so on. Now, I think Buddhism in general, not just Tibetan Buddhism, but Buddhism in general, can make a very different kind of contribution to modern culture, which is by bringing people the awareness and the kind of practices that they can use to regulate their emotions. And I think that's very useful, very important. That's a contribution that Buddhism can make, and in a way has already made, because there is, you probably heard about mindfulness, is quite popular in America. And so mindfulness is one example of a kind of practice that people can use to regulate their emotion. The point is very simple, is that this is what one of my teachers, Genlati Rinpoche, said when I left the monastery, and he said, "Well, if your mind follows you, things will go well. If you follow your mind, there is going to be trouble." And so, what we are talking is about a kind of practice that we can use so that our mind is following us, rather than we follow whatever comes in our mind. Because in the ordinary state, there are things that come up like this in terms of desire and anger and pride and all these things that come up naturally, right? These are natural emotions and they come up. And the question is, how do we deal with these emotions, right? And I think that Buddhism, not just Tibetan Buddhism, but Buddhism in general, bring a set of practices that are very useful to regulate this kind of emotion, so that we learn how to manage our mind and not be prisoners of our, you know, of what's come up. I mean, sometimes our demons, right? Yeah. So this is, I think, important in terms of the contribution that Buddhism can make to modern culture, because that's not something like we were talking before, which is esoteric and difficult to understand and difficult to practice. This is easy to practice, right? Everybody can do it. And I think modern people are in great need of that, because modern life is very stressful. And so they are in great need of learning techniques and practices that can be used to regulate emotion, to regulate one's mind, so that so that when bad emotions come out, we don't follow them, and then we learn how to manage them, and maybe replace with more fruitful emotions such as compassion and loving kindness. And that's kayo layok in Nyamlen. This is everyday's practice that everybody can do. You don't need to be a geshe, you don't need to be a philosopher, you don't need to be a scholar.
Yeah, thank you so much, and it's been very interesting discussion that we just had, and it was lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.